are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Glad to have you listening in to our latest Crossover Thursday show. I'll be teaming up with Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings to break down the latest chapter in what has become a fun NFC rivalry over the years. It feels like the Seahawks and Vikings play every single year. Basically, Minnesota has become a fifth team in the NFC West. Looking forward to breaking this matchup down with Luke Braun. Really knows his stuff about the Minnesota Vikings. The Locked On NFL Draft podcast relaunches September 20th with brand new hosts. Eric Crocker brings the player scouting. Ryan Tracy brings the analytics. Follow the Locked On NFL Draft podcast on YouTube, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get podcasts. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Though the move is yet to become official, the Seahawks look poised to add to their tight end group on the practice squad. Jay Sternberger, who played the past two seasons with the Packers, was waived earlier this week, and the Seahawks didn't waste much time pursuing the former third-round pick out of Texas A&M. At the time of this show, no contract had reportedly been signed as official, but sources I spoke with indicated Sternberger flew out to Seattle today with the expectation a deal would get done. He could be practicing as early as Friday. Sternberger's NFL career hasn't necessarily gone how Green Bay hoped it would or the player hoped it would. You go back to 2018, he had a breakout season at Texas A&M, and this is a player that had bounced around at the college level. He spent 1 year at Kansas, and then he was at the junior college level, found his way to Texas A&M, caught 48 passes for 832 yards and 10 touchdowns, so a breakout year for the Aggies. And he decided to forego the final year of his eligibility, and considering he had bounced around so much at the college level, why not? His stock had never been higher. Unfortunately, he did not test well at the 2019 Combine compared to what his athleticism looked like on game tape. A 4.75 40-yard dash is a respectable time for a tight end, but he didn't jump well, just a 31.5-inch vertical jump. His three-cone and short shuttle were a little slower than the Seahawks typically prefer at the tight end position. And then when you look at his NFL career, after joining the Packers, he missed most of his rookie year. He started the season on injured reserve, did not get activated until November, only appeared in a couple of games, and had one target for no receptions in the regular season. He did score a touchdown for the Packers in the NFC Championship game that year against the 49ers. Last year, behind Robert Tonyan, he had 12 catches for 114 yards and a touchdown in limited action as a backup. He was suspended the first two games of this season for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy. Once he was activated from the suspension list, the Packers waived him earlier this week. So there's a lot to unpack here. Talking about a guy that now has some character issues that have come up. He bounced around a lot at the college level, really had one good college season at the Division I level. So he was drafted in the third round based off of that and not a sustained level of success at the college level. But you look at the player. He's 6'4", 250 pounds. He's got good size. He's not known for his run-blocking ability. He's not going to be a guy that plays many snaps as an inline tight end. But he's a player that you can move around. He can run routes from the slot, from outside. He runs better than what his times at the combine suggest. Just a better athlete in general than what those testing numbers would indicate. And he has shown in the past that 1 year at Texas A&M, and even last year, there have been glimpses that he can be a very productive receiving tight end. And so this is a player that is certainly worth a flyer for the Seahawks, especially when you consider looking at their tight end depth right now. Gerald Everett and Will Dissly are the top two tight ends. Colby Parkinson is still on injured reserve. He's eligible to be activated next week, but it remains to be seen if he's going to be able to come back just yet from a broken foot that he suffered midway through training camp. They are going to be cautious with Parkinson, especially because he re-injured a foot that he broke the year before. So you want to make sure he's fully healed. It's still very early in the season, so he might still be out for a few more weeks. Sternberger gives them an athletic pass-catching tight end that can be an insurance option. Tyler Mabry right now is their number three tight end. It's possible if they like what they see from Sternberger that the Seahawks could decide to swap those guys. They could move him up as a practice squad call up. There are a lot of options here, but certainly this is a player that has shown glimpses where he can be an effective pass-catching tight end. Haven't seen much of that at the NFL level, hence why the Packers moved on from him early in his third season, but he's still only 25 years old. With the soft hands he has, the size that he exhibits, this is certainly a player that is worth taking a look at and see whether or not he can be a player that can find his way onto Seattle's roster at some point. Totally worth the flyer. We'll see what happens. Again, no contract has been signed as of the time of this recording, but the Seahawks are hoping to have him under contract on the practice squad by Friday, get him onto the practice field, and start to see whether or not he can fit in here in Seattle. When I come back in the second quarter, I'm going to be joined by Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings. The two of us are going to start dissecting this upcoming Week 3 matchup at U.S. Bank Stadium. We'll start off looking at the Vikings closely. Seahawks will cover in the third quarter of our show. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. When you consider the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models out there, it is impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts, to tail lamps, motor oil. They even have steering wheel covers. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, they have everything you need in a few easy clicks, and it'll be delivered directly to your door. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
All right, everybody, it's Crossover Thursday, and we're kicking it off. It's Seahawks week. It's time for the craziest two teams to go get together in an afternoon game indoors and see what sort of laws of physics and magic they can break. And to break that down or attempt to, I got Corbin Smith here of Locked On Seahawks. Corbin, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. I'm just glad to be moving on from Sunday and start looking fresh towards another game.
Yeah, tell me about it. A bit of a rough one for the both of our teams, huh?
So yeah, I was initially like, man, you guys couldn't beat the Cardinals, because I thought at that point the Seahawks are going to win their game, and then whoever makes those decisions decided the football gods decided that's not going to happen. So yeah. The Titans decided to make things miserable for the 12s this past week. So.
Yeah, and they handed the Cardinals a blowout too. So, but let's talk about your Seahawks. So obviously, you know, Seahawks are 1-1, and this is a much different Seahawks team than the ones that we all fell in love with in the middle of the 2010s, you know, the Legion of Boom. I think I saw somebody call it like the Legion of Room. So what's going on with that secondary? Are you guys okay?
Well, they've got two really good safeties. The problem right now is the cornerback group, and this was an issue going into the offseason. They let Shaquille Griffin go to the Jaguars in free agency, and quite frankly, I think that was the right move. The money that the Jaguars paid Shaquille Griffin, I think he's good. I wouldn't call him a great or elite corner, so that was money that they were better off spending elsewhere. The problem is, the replacement that they signed was Akello Witherspoon, and he's now wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers uniform because he couldn't hold on to the starting job that they gifted him in training camp. So now DJ Reed and Trey Flowers, who has been the starter for now the better part of three seasons, the Seahawks know who he is. He can be a serviceable starter when he's at his best, but when he's not at his best, he can be exploited. And the Titans were able to do that last week with their standout receivers. So I don't think it's out of the question. Right now, I would anticipate Trey Flowers and DJ Reed are going to be the starters as they have been going into this game. But if one or both of them struggles early in this game, I could see Sidney Jones making his debut in the secondary for the Seahawks. They really like him. Former second round pick for the Eagles. He's had injury issues, but he's got really good athletic traits. He has great ball skills. They have not been able to get their hands on any footballs to speak of with their corners up to this point. So I would not be shocked if we see Sidney Jones at some point in this game, especially if one of those players, most definitely Trey Flowers, how he played last week. If he struggles, I could see Sidney Jones being the guy, but there's a lot of question marks there that a lot of fans are upset about because they're like, you knew this was an issue in the offseason, so why didn't they do more to address it? And now it's kind of rearing its ugly head here early in the season.
Yeah, well, I'm familiar with that struggle, especially like offensive line and stuff, but we'll talk about that for your show later. I want to talk a little bit about Jamal Adams. Obviously, he signs this big contract. You've paid so much for him. I've always thought of him as a kind of Seahawks Anthony Barr, and people kind of joke that he's like actually a linebacker because he's the best pass rusher on the Seahawks and stuff. But it seems like he's just that kind of chess piece guy that you can ask him to do basically anything in coverage. You can ask him to be part of the blitz package and do all this stuff. Does the offense or does the defense revolve around Jamal Adams the way that I think it does? Or am I getting too wrapped up in his name value?
To be honest, I don't think that it does. It feels like right now to me, they're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. And it's interesting that I feel that way because last year I thought the second half, they really figured out how to best utilize Jamal Adams. They weren't blitzing him quite as much in the second half, but when they were sending him, he was extremely efficient. And they started to move him around a little bit more in terms of coverages, and it just seemed like he was more comfortable. Early on, you could tell he was in a new defense and struggling, but they're playing him a lot back as a too high deep safety right now, around 40.
Helping out those corners, probably.
And I just don't know that that's utilizing him correctly, because I'm not going to sit here and say he's a linebacker. I don't necessarily agree with that, but
okay. He's
kind of that Minka Fitzpatrick type that you can move all over the place. And I think he's got better ball skills than people realize. The problem is, though, his best asset to you is his ability to fly into the backfield. And he's so good at timing his pass rushing blitzes. And they just haven't been doing that very much. He's only been sent, I think, 9 times the first 2 games. They're not blitzing him very often. And Pete Carroll's kind of hinted at, we're not going to do that. Which makes me wonder, are you really maximizing the player that you have there? Because I think he's a phenomenal talent, but he hasn't made any splash plays these first 2 games. And so you're wondering, are you getting your bang for your buck, the money that you just spent on this guy, when I think he's more than capable of doing it? So I don't feel like this defense revolves around him. It feels like they're trying to find a way to mesh him with what they want to do. And they're still both in a learning curve here, which 15 games in, I don't think that's what fans wanted to hear.
Yeah, I wonder if they're just trying to protect those corners then with like putting him in the backfield or something. But I want to flip to the offense also and talk about it, because this is a different Seahawks offense than what Russell Wilson has had over the last like decade. You guys took a Sean McVay clone and are doing the Sean McVay thing. How is that going?
Well, in week 1, it looked really good. They were running a lot more pre-snap motion. You had a lot more involvement in tight ends. The offense was more balanced, which I know Pete Carroll was excited about that. And with the running back talent they have, they should be running the ball a fair amount. I mean, that's the roster that they've got. Their personnel is built to be able to do that. But then against Tennessee, I was waiting for Shane Waldron. I've joked about this the last couple of days. I was waiting for him to take his face off and realize it was Brian Schottenheimer, because the offense looked like a carbon copy of the second half last year. It was stagnant. There was very little motion. One target to the tight ends the entire game, and the Titans were running a lot of their 2-deep stuff, and they were disguising into 2-deep to take away those deep balls, and it still didn't work a few times because they had the worst busted coverages I've ever seen, but that's beside the point.
They've had an issue with that.
They were all or nothing the entire game. They got some explosive plays. They benefited from a quick turnover from their defense to get another touchdown in the second quarter, but they really couldn't get any rhythm going. And it felt like I was watching the offense they were trying to move away from that really struggled the last couple months last year. And so the jury's still out. I think that Shane Waldron's going to be a good OC. I think he's going to be a good fit, but last week was kind of a little bit of a regression that fans weren't ready for after what they saw in week 1. So they're hoping to see more of those motions and more of the tight ends being involved than a running game that's got some deception to it. Those were elements that were there in week one that, quite frankly, were not in week two. And so fans are going to be hopeful that they can see the week one version of Shane Waldron in Minnesota and not last week's.
That's interesting because you can really, like, that's the kind of stuff you should be able to see when you have a lead, and the Seahawks were protecting the lead for most of that game. But I want to go in and, like, watch all of that stuff. It's super interesting. I want to watch all the pre-snap stuff that happened between the offense and defense and all of that. Corbin, thank you so much for pointing me in the right direction. I'm super excited to go watch some Seahawks and get to know this team.
BetOnline is back and better than ever. All eyes are on the Gridironers. Teams are back on to start another football season. And as always, BetOnline is your top spot for all the pro and college football action this season. They've got a new updated site and interface, more odds, props, and contests. BetOnline.ag continues to be the number one source for everything football. Make sure to check out their website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive 100% welcome bonus. That's double your initial deposit just for signing up. And don't forget to use the promo code NFL100. Whether it's football, basketball, boxing, or your favorite Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hey Seahawk fans, if you do a lot of driving like I do, then you need to know about a fantastic new app called Get Upside. When you open an account on Get Upside, you can get 25 cents per gallon back every time you fill up at the pump. Over time, that kind of savings really starts to add up. Some people are making as much as $200 to $300 per month in cash back with Get Upside, which not only makes it easy to save, but also gives you multiple cash out options, such as direct payment to your bank account, PayPal, Amazon gift cards, and more available at any time. And now when you open an account and use our special promo code Touchdown, you can get a bonus 25 cents back per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents back per gallon. So don't pay full price at the pump anymore. I'm definitely not going to be doing it. Download the free Get Upside app. Use our special promo code Touchdown when you sign up for your account and start saving every time your car or truck needs a fill up. That's Get Upside, available in the iTunes App Store and on Google Play. And that promo code again is Touchdown.
Welcome back to the Locked On Crossover Series. Hard to believe we're already to week three. Once you get to the regular season, it's really a blur. Games just fly by. But the Seahawks are looking to bounce back, as are the Vikings. They've yet to get a win, even though they've been very competitive. They've been in a position to win both their games up to this point. Just haven't been able to finish. Both these teams couldn't finish a week ago. Breaking down this upcoming matchup between the Seahawks and Vikings, I'm happy to be joined by Luke Braun of Locked On Vikings. I'm Corbin Smith for Locked On Seahawks. Luke, how are you doing?
Well, doing 0-2. It's a very frustrating 0-2, point differential of -4, and you're sitting there in the, well, are we going to start tanking for draft picks kind of question.
Yeah, you know, especially because in that division, you know, you got Green Bay started to look like Green Bay last week. Right. Granted, they played the Detroit Lions, but Chicago's
everybody
now got
gets a get right game
playing, and they've got some talented players. So, you know, it's not one of the best divisions in football, but certainly 0-2 is never a good start. But I've been impressed by a lot of things I've seen. The clips I've been able to watch in the All-22 so far. I've not gotten through entire games just yet, but I want to start on that offensive line because we know all the skill talent that the Vikings have in the backfield and a receiver, but they use a first-round pick on Christian Darrisaw, and he has yet to play a snap. He's still on their injury report going into this matchup on Sunday. What has been the overall impression of this offensive line to this point, and how have they been able to withstand the fact that Darrisaw has not been able to play yet? You know, first-round pick, you're hoping you can get him into the lineup quickly.
Yeah, so there's kind of two parts. I'll go with the overall offensive line. The offensive line, I think, has been a little better than I thought it would be. I was pretty worried about them. They had one kind of bad game, one good game. And I honestly didn't think you'd get a good game in the first 2 weeks out of them. But they've had a couple of interest. First off, Brian O'Neill has been a superstar. He has not given up a pressure yet in two games. He just signed this big extension. He's the right tackle. You have two new guards, and both of them are converted tackles. You have Ezra Cleveland, who played right guard last year, was a struggle. He's playing left guard now. He's not doing all that much better, but you can tell he's used to the left side. That's helping him out. And then you have Oli Udo, who was a sixth round right tackle like 3 years ago, who's just been kind of incubating in the wings, and suddenly he comes out and he's actually been kind of a revelation at right guard. Got a great pancake on JJ Watt last week that everybody's really excited about. And Garrett Bradbury's been there for a while. He's the same guy he's always been. Struggles with power a little bit, but he has really, really good technique and run blocking and stuff, and he does the center duties pretty well. And then you have this left tackle problem where they just drafted Christian Darrisaw in the first round. In college, he was dealing with a groin injury. I think it was some kind of sports hernia, but don't quote me on that. And he had a setback in the preseason with that and had to go get another cleanup surgery. So that's what's been keeping him out. If he were healthy, he would have to compete with Rashad Hill, who's the guy who is starting right now, who's been the backup for years and is kind of finally getting his opportunity to be the true blue starter. That has gone not excellently. So when Christian Darrisaw is healthy, hopefully he can get in. But that was supposed to be a camp competition. He had to win the job, and he never took any team reps in camp, I think, except for like one in one day. It was supposed to be a competition that Darrisaw couldn't take from Rashad Hill. So even if Darrisaw's healthy, I don't know if they put Darrisaw out because he never went out and won the job. And you can't exactly win the job in the middle of the season with the way that game reps go. So I don't know what the deal is there, but either way, that left tackle spot is going to be a big question mark, whether it's Rashad Hill or, you know, Darrisaw is basically limited every week, and he didn't go on IR to start the season. So I think the team was pretty optimistic that he'd be in by this game. I think there's a decent chance he plays in this game, but I don't know if he actually starts in this game. Maybe he suits up and is the backup to the guy that played all training camp.
Now, Seahawks fans, unfortunately, they know all about high draft picks not being able to play as rookies, and so they can relate. And ironically, Daryl Taylor is probably going to be one of the guys that gets to rush if Darrisaw's in this game. Is going to be one of the guys that gets to rush against him fairly frequently, and he missed his entire rookie year. So Seahawks fans know that all too well. I want to go out to the outside real quick because Adam Thielen has been a thorn in Seattle's side over the years. The last time, I actually think last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, he had a game that he had two touchdowns against Seattle late and turned a 34-17 game into 34-30 just like that. Really quickly was able to put a couple scores on the board. And he's always been a problem for them. Justin Jefferson had a really good rookie year. Kind of had a quiet game last year when these two teams got together. But you've got those two stars. And then suddenly KJ Osborne comes kind of out of nowhere. And he's, I believe, second on your team in receiving yards in the first two games. How surprising has that been that he's been that big of a focal point in this offense? And how does that change the way that defenses have to approach this football team, having another really good receiver that's really emerged from Minnesota?
Yeah, when he came out as a rookie, I don't think he was quite ready for the NFL. He spent most of his college career at the University of Buffalo, transferred to Miami as a grad transfer before he got drafted. Guy was a fifth round pick, kind of nobody guy. And he barely made the team, only on special teams, and he lost that special teams job by midseason. So it kind of seemed like, all right, just a fifth round pick that didn't work out. Offseason, and this dude is all work ethic. You apply whatever gritty gym rat, lunch pail cliche you want to this guy. He's literally first in, last out, like a lot of days of camp, first guy on the field and the last guy off it. And in the offseason, he goes to work out with Jarvis Landry and Justin Jefferson, a bunch of other LSU people. But he really credits a lot to Jarvis Landry and of like teaching him new things. He's way better at tracking the ball, way better at routes. And currently, he is the most efficient receiver on the Vikings. Everybody's paying so much attention to Thielen and Jefferson. They're leaving KJ Osborne one-on-one with their third best corner, and he keeps winning on slant routes and converting third downs. He has been kind of this revelation, and as the dependable third wide receiver the Vikings have been craving since they lost like Jarius Wright, you know, 5 years ago or however long that was. It's always kind of been a two-man show, so it's really, really refreshing to get a third guy, especially because the third kind of primary receiving option was supposed to be Irv Smith, and then he got a meniscus injury in the preseason. So like just in time, they can kind of go from a two tight end base to a three wide receiver base because they have a third viable receiver on the team again.
So I can expect to see some different personnel groupings with Irv Smith being out and having Osborne emerge. Probably a lot more of your typical 11 personnel looks that we've seen really run rampant in the NFL. And the Vikings, I'm sure, will still use some multi-tight end sets. But shifting to the defense real quick, I don't feel like we need that much analysis in the defensive line because Danielle Hunter frightens me. He always is frightening me.
He's the guy.
Seahawks did not have to worry about him last year because he was hurt for that game, but he has had a lot of success getting to Russell Wilson in the past. But the area of potential concern for the Vikings, especially looking at their injury report today with Patrick Peterson and Breshad Breeland both being limited, that is a secondary that's pretty banged up right now, and they've had their share of issues giving up some big plays early on. If one or both of those guys somehow can't play, I mean, do the Vikings, who do they have waiting in the wings, especially with Harrison Hand now going to the COVID-19 list? I mean, who's going to be able to match up with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Freddie Swain?
Yeah, we'll see about those two injuries, but we might have a little bit of an Egg Bowl rematch with Cameron Dantzler out of Mississippi State might have to keep up with DK Metcalf. If you remember the last game, Dantzler lost a ball in the lights on the final drive for Russell Wilson, and that's what led to the final touchdown that ended that Sunday night game. I think it was a 4th and 10 and stuff. So there's a little bit of a maybe he's angling at redemption arc here, but it's also, you know, Mississippi State versus Ole Miss, which is always fun. You've got him. You have Chris Boyd, who's a 3rd-year guy out of Texas, who's mostly been a backup. And I think he should remain a backup. He's definitely somebody you would want to go at if he ends up getting like a lot of time. And they might honestly start activating guys off the practice squad just for depth. They have Perry Nickerson and Ty Smith, a couple of kind of longtime veteran backup types that have been in the league for a couple of years deep on rosters that are on their practice squad right now. But really, they have like no nickel depth. Their backup nickel is Harrison Hand, who's on the COVID list. And I don't think he's going to be off of it by game time. I could be wrong on that. So again, don't quote me, but yeah, the depth is an extremely high level of concern. But if those two starters can go, you know, Patrick Peterson's been, I think, better than the stats you look up can have would imply. But Breshad Breeland, if he does go, is also a guy that you should attack. He's been purely abysmal this season so far. He's been killed down the sideline in both games. So he is definitely somebody that if you find a one-on-one matchup, DK Metcalf on Breshad Breeland, take it.
Patrick Peterson and DK Metcalf have had some interesting battles with him in Arizona the last couple of years. And Peterson's actually been one of the few corners in the league that's had some success against DK Metcalf. And Russell Wilson's been picked by him a few times over the years. So if he plays, that would certainly create a little bit of an advantage for the Vikings because they would have that familiarity and a guy that has had some success. At the same time, is getting to be a little bit older corner. But I always look forward to these matchups and these two teams get together. I joked with Bobby Wagner about this on Wednesday that it feels like the Vikings really are the 5th team in the NFC West because the Seahawks play them every year.
You're coming to Minnesota this time.
And so I know that fans are looking forward to these two teams that always have really interesting games when they get together. The last couple of years in Seattle, the games have gone down to the wire. And so hopefully we'll be able to see a similar type finish in Minnesota. Seahawks and Vikings both looking to get back in the win column. Appreciate having a chance to chat with you and learn a little bit more about this Viking squad. Where can our listeners find your podcast?
Yeah, Locked On Vikings, just like Locked On Seahawks, is free on all platforms, Google, Spotify, YouTube even, if you're interested in a video version. You can find it wherever you find your favorite shows. Just look up Locked On Vikings. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. Shows on Twitter at Locked On Vikings.
Luke does a fantastic job covering the Vikings. So if you're looking for a visiting team angle, make sure to go check out his podcast. Appreciate having the chance to chat with you and really looking forward to the game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's always a weird one.